When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
The Bears lost the game. It's not like they won. I mean, they came back and scored a touchdown. I get that. You know, poor Jalen Johnson. But he did fall down. Mad happens. Guy slipped.
Hurt, especially for myself. I have no business tripping. I got to find a way to stay up.
It was a bad moment to have it happen.
It was a bad moment to have that happen.
Holy cow.
It was a bad moment to be your best defensive player in the spot that you wanted to be and him do that.
Because I know if I stay up, I'm going to make that play. So, I mean, just for me, you got to figure out a way to be better.
But that was indicative, I mean, and emblematic of everything the Bears did. They fell in their face.
They fell in their face.
They fell in their face.
They slipped.
They did a Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, it's almost comical.
And now you've got another loss to your rival.
My God.
And they keep piling up, Molly.
And they've lost four in a row, two in as horrific a fashion as humanly possible.
Just kind of all the Bears are just show, where the Bears are this, Bears are that.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Yes, sir.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Well, at least the Bears aren't the Cowboys, Mr. David.
Yes, they're not the Cowboys. Thank goodness. One is bad, the other's worse. You choose which one you want to put in whatever category. But last night, ugly Monday night football game. Definitely the Cowboys have some cleaning up to do organizationally. That's going to be an offseason story that will probably dwarf and overshadow the Bears. But both teams, I think, in the midst of facing real significant organizational changes. So last night, Monday Night Football, not really worth your time.
No.
I hope that you didn't spend too much time.
Oh, no. I looked in on it. I spent a lot of time with the Bulls.
Yes.
It was fun to watch the Bulls game.
The Bulls were fun again.
I got to tell you. And what is the well? Is that leading up to Mr.
Zach
Justin?
Zach Levine.
There you go.
Get out of Zach's way. Thunder dunk and six threes in the fourth.
Zach called in Zach.
You know what he did? He maxed out last night.
Zach?
Yes.
Zach Saban?
Both Zachs. Last night was a great night to be Zach.
Zach attack.
Get out of Zach's way!
Zach
Saban filling in for Chuck Swirsky. Did a terrific job. I loved listening to Zach. And then watching Zach LaVine do his thing.
He did a terrific job.
Oh, my gosh. It was so much fun, especially in the light of yesterday.
I had a friend who sent me a text before the game. I hope I'm not speaking out of school. I won't say his name. Said he was betting Josh Giddey for a triple-double. He's like, what do you think? And I texted him back and I said, will he get the minutes? I mean, I wouldn't wager on a triple. He had like 11 points. He had 10 assists, I think, but seven, eight. He was short of the triple-double. But it was a really put your neck out there.
Yes.
Gutsy.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah.
I have a friend.
Foolish.
Who shall not be named.
Yeah.
But perhaps if he wants to claim this, who did not return my text in the fourth quarter when I informed him that Max LaVine is on fire.
Is that Mr. Dustino?
Yes. Mr. Dustino ignored me. I got ghosted by Dustin because Zach LaVine was so good in the fourth quarter.
He could have passed out by then.
Ghosted.
I was actually watching Monday Night Football because I had a fantasy game in the balance, and my guy Joe Mixon with the trifecta led me to a victory.
Good pick, Joe Mixon.
Bad choice.
That's a good
hit. Bad choice.
Really? Why? He's doing well.
No, Joe Mixon's a terrific running back. I think any bet on him is probably a safe one. But when Zach LaVine is on the verge of doing what he did.
Oh, bad choice to watch.
Yes. Bad sports choice.
Yeah.
Bad sports fan.
I did then switch over.
Good.
After you got the text, you didn't
return? After I got the text.
But it just came off last night or yesterday, came on the heels of the weekend, and Dustin was down on Zach LaVine.
Listen, the Bulls had
back-to-back games where they allowed 140 points.
They did.
I mean, they needed that win last night, and they needed to do it without allowing 140 points.
And you know what? It wasn't really the defense that did it. No. They shot 50% from behind the arc.
That's it.
23, I think, of 46. And
what did they have, 23? 23, you said.
Yeah.
Jordan, number of threes.
Kobe White backed up his big talk with a big game, 25 points.
Yes.
Zach did what he did. He had 9 points going into the fourth quarter. He hit 6 of 8 threes. And Vooch was really the
led
guy that
scores.
Got he got things started.
Points.
He was really something. Did you know the stat was after the game, they had seventh time in NBA history, three guys have had like 6 3-pointers and 25 points. And it's the big three.
Yeah.
The Bulls' big three.
Yeah.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah, I guess that's.
Did you enjoy watching the Bulls?
I always enjoyed watching the Bulls, even in loss. I thought the Cleveland game, if you could get past the floor, was a fun game to watch. It just got silly at the end. And they were in that game for much of it. It's just like the last, I don't know,
you know,
4 or 5 minutes of that game. It just all of a sudden it was like, oh, how did that get to 140? Donovan Mitchell took over that game. He like knocked down a couple big shots. He scored a bucket. It was the Donovan Mitchell show, as it always is.
November NBA basketball can be a hard sell because really you don't know. Teams aren't really defined yet. They're working out things. It's November. There's so much. It's such a long season. But last night was definitely worth your time.
I think February NBA basketball is harder.
Do you really?
Yeah, because I think you're in the dog days at that point. And, you know, even the good teams. Nowadays, you don't know who's playing or who isn't. I understand what you're saying, though, because you're still trying to figure out who you are and what you're going to be. But it's I've found this season so much more enjoyable watching the Bulls than I imagined it would be.
So far, so good. Same here.
Yep.
And the actual stat is not 6 or more 3-pointers, it's 5 or more. So they become the seventh trio in NBA history to each score 25 points while making 5 or more 3-pointers. That's remarkable.
You can probably come up with some trios off the top of your head who have done it, right? I mean, it's definitely something Golden State's done.
Yeah.
Because they do 3-pointers.
That's the team you think of first.
Yeah.
And I imagine LeBron would have to be involved at some point with something like that.
One of his trios.
You wonder about the Pacers back in the Reggie Miller days. I'm sure Ray Allen was involved. We'll have to get that list.
Yeah.
It'd be an interesting list.
Yeah, it'd be fun to think
take
about.
A delve into NBA history. Speaking of sad day.
Yeah, we lost Bob Love.
Passed away,
yeah,
81 that, years old.
That really saddened me. Bob Love was a huge,
I wondered about that.
Yeah. I remember growing up, and the Bulls weren't on television all the time. But we would either watch them or we'd listen on the radio, Jim Durham back in the day, or we would watch the Bulls on like a later broadcast. So like a few different times, and this happened quite a bit in my childhood, someone would come in the door and say, hey, did you see DePaul won or whatever? And we'd be like, we're watching it! Like, that, you know, you'd get the result because the games were on tape delay for whatever reason. Who knows? We never paid for anything when I was a kid. But there were a lot of big, you know, Bulls kind of playoff games where the stadium would be rocking and you'd be sitting around the radio. I mean, I sound like I'm 90.
No, I know, we
didn't have
it. It's a different era, and Bob Love meant so much to the Bulls.
Great
in those days, 81 years old.
Great story, Bob Love.
Oh, you know what?
He had a stutter, and he had to overcome that.
I was at something where, in his latter years, he was a Bulls ambassador.
Yes.
So he would be around the community.
Yes.
This is probably 10 to 15 years ago. I was at the Tribune. I was covering something, and he was one of the speakers. And I have to say that I'm sure that he told this story time and again. And if you want to read it, Sam Smith on Bulls.com has a tremendous tribute because Sam was close, I think, with Bob Love and really respected him. Bob Love, after his playing days were over, and he was a great Bull, was in financial hardship, went bankrupt.
It's like the leading scorer in Bulls history for a long period of time.
Yes, and yet, in spite of that, he was down on his luck in Seattle, went to work as a dishwasher,
yes,
a busboy, making like $4.45 an hour.
Right.
And couldn't overcome this stutter.
Yes.
And then he found out in Seattle help for it, a therapist that helped him get past it. And then he became somebody who would talk about his story as an ambassador. He took this group, I forget where it was, but this group, it was probably a lunch crowd. They were moved by the way that he talked about
right
what he went through. And it was impossible not to be. Ton of respect for him. Big loss for the franchise. And 81 years old. Rest in peace.
Yeah. He apparently had a long battle with cancer. So it's sad to, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants and, you know, that organization. He was one of the first superstars in that organization and a great player. And as you say, a great ambassador, a lovely man, like a very nice person, really good guy, Bob Love, in all of my dealings with him over the years. And a figure from my childhood.
Always had that reputation as being just a real great guy and terrific ambassador. So, that was Bulls win and had the sad news after that. And then you found out that you probably went back to Monday Night Football and Texans took care of business.
They're an interesting team because they're not quite as good as you thought they'd be.
I'm a little surprised that they're not.
But if you step back and look at it, they are, considering where they were and how far they've come in 2 years, it's pretty extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. And it's also one of those teams where, in the final analysis after a night like last night, you look at where they are in the standings and you wonder, will they be better off for the struggle in the first half?
That's interesting.
They're not as good as we thought they would be.
Right, right.
Stephon Diggs goes down as well.
Yep.
They have to do things with, you know, injured wide receiving core. C.J. Stroud hasn't been as great as he was as a rookie.
Yep.
And yet you wonder, are they developing this sort of toughness, this mental toughness that will help them in the playoffs or overcome things?
Callous.
Thank you. Callous. That's the right word. That is the right word. And they're callousing themselves for things that they have aspirations to go deep in the playoffs. And you know what? They're good enough too.
Yeah.
They have those edge rushers that I think when you look at Hunter and Will Anderson, when they get him back, you have edge rushers. You have a quarterback, you've got receivers, and you got Joe Mixon, the running back.
Great player.
So you've got a lot of weapons. You got a coach that you trust.
Yeah, and they got like a good young brain trust. They really come a long distance in a very short amount of time. But but they are like, there are five better teams in the AFC, right?
Where all the good teams live.
The Chiefs and the Bills. I would say that, you know, the Chargers are moving into that. There are some really good football teams.
How about the AFC West all of a sudden?
Yeah.
With some very interesting teams. Obviously, the Chiefs are there. The Chargers look dangerous, and because they have an identity under Jim Harbaugh really early in his tenure. You've got the Broncos, where you have to give credit.
Yeah.
You know, I did not think they made a good choice in Bo Nix, but Sean Payton is getting things done there. Yep. So you've got some very interesting teams in that division. AFC's got all the good teams.
The Steelers are so much better than people thought. The Ravens are still a really good team.
Coaching matters.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a lot. They got a lot in the AFC.
Meanwhile, in the NFC, it's the Lions and everybody else. It really feels that way right now.
Yeah. I mean, the Lions are well ahead. The Eagles are beware the closer. You know, the Eagles are stalking. They're in a really nice position.
I think they're probably next after the Lions.
Yeah,
because they have their quarterback. It can be dangerous. They have a lot of elements,
and they got a 2-game lead in the loss column over the Commanders now, which is significant at this point in
it
the
is.
Year.
So, and the NFC West is not what we expected it to be.
No, it's not. Well, the Niners have struggled all year, and the Rams are .500 now.
Can I ask
you? The idea of the Cardinals leading that division.
The Cardinals leading that division is crazy. So, can I ask you a question that is maybe a glimpse into somehow in the NFL you have these irrational thoughts and curiosities? San Francisco is 5-5.
Yeah.
Where is their season headed?
That's a great question. Are they coming back?
Could it be derailed?
Zach Purdy apparently now has got some knee issue. It's not. He's probably playing through it, but I'm just saying, you know, just adding to the tale of woe.
If they go down that path and they add a few more chapters to the tale of woe, are they in any position of facing this organizational overhaul that sometimes we see NFL teams overreact?
Yeah.
Is Kyle Shanahan in trouble?
No.
Could you see Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch headed for divorce?
Well, even if they are, Kyle Shanahan
I'm
is
just
the guy
asking.
You hang on to. I'm just saying. You know, could the Bears get Kyle Shanahan? Is that what your mind
I'm
wanders?
Just wondering, if you look at Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, I mean, and you say, what's that song? I want to single you up. Is there any way that they are going to split up?
He is.
Or is that a football marriage that's going to last?
Kyle Shanahan is a quarterback proof head coach. He can win with so many different types of quarterbacks. That is the thing in the league that you got to have is a quarterback. Does he have one? They've created one. But it's pretty extraordinary that they drafted Trey Lance and that was going to be his canvas. And then they end up with the seventh round.
They pulled the plug fast.
Irrelevant. Well,
they pulled the plug
very
fast.
I think he knows
fast.
What he's looking at. I don't think he has the time to wait on it.
Right.
I was curious
if you saw that.
I mean, I don't see it, David, but like, could it happen? I mean, the Niners' ownership is probably dumb enough to side with the wrong guy.
Well, that's what I wondered because you see these things happen in the NFL. And actually, I blame you for if it sounds really outlandish because you asked me yesterday a good question, fair question, about Cleveland and Kevin Stefanski.
Well,
the AFC coach of the year, right. Reigning coach of the year.
Yes.
And he's staring at possibly getting fired if they fall off the rails.
I don't think if I were an owner, I might follow the Steelers' lead as opposed to some other teams. They always sided with the coach over the general manager, and I just think that coaching matters, as you said earlier. I think it's very important, and they've hung on to guys. And I know Steeler fans that don't like Mike Tomlin because he hasn't won a championship in a while, but you know he keeps.
What's
getting,
a while?
I mean,
was Chicago a while or
not,
Pittsburgh
not
a while?
Chicago a while.
Okay. Yeah,
but I mean, they always stuck with the coach over the general manager. They always kind of made that decision with whether it was Cowher or whomever.
They never really had a general manager.
They were always
they
careful
diminished the role.
To stick with the coach.
Yeah, and I think that. You don't see that as often as you used to, though.
Right.
Because there's such a value placed on front offices, and the offseason has become so elaborate in terms of scouting, in terms of the draft, in terms of free agency and the cap, that you need to beef up these front offices, and you need a general manager that's going to lead that charge. I almost think that that's valued over coaches. I'm not saying it's the right move,
right.
But you see more owners likely to side with the management side if they consider the coaches the other side. And I don't know if Cleveland will do that, but I could understand why you'd make that argument because
in your mind, do you think that John Lynch is more valuable than Kyle Shanahan?
I don't. I wouldn't. But it would not surprise me if the 49ers, if they were having this tug of war with Jed York and they looked at it that way, that they would.
They lost the Super Bowl in overtime last year.
But they got there.
They lost in overtime.
I know.
I'm saying they not only got there, they were in overtime.
I know. But so the argument would be, and I guess I'm maybe looking at it through Bear goggles, that you have a team that with a roster that's good enough to get to the Super Bowl, you want a coach that's going to be able to finish the job.
See, oh my gosh. That's just so disrespectful.
I know it is. I'm not saying that I would do anything except for be grateful for the opportunity to work with both those guys.
If you got into a Super Bowl, would you rather have the coach that could take the Mr. Irrelevant there, or would you rather have the quarterback that is the best guy in the game? Because that's the answer to that question about why they lost the Super Bowl.
coach versus MVP?
The coach, the MVP of the Super Bowl.
I'd rather have the player.
Yes.
I'd rather have the player.
He won the thing.
10 out of 10 times.
Don't you?
I mean,
Don't you rather have Patrick Mahomes in that situation than Brock Purdy?
Yeah, I do think that. I do think that's a no-brainer. Molly, I am not suggesting that one is that much different than the other. Both those guys work in concert well and have had the success and track record to prove it. All I am saying is that we have seen sports divorces before that we don't understand from ownership groups or successful franchises that think that they need a change and they talk themselves into it.
Well, if I were John Lynch, I'd make sure that I didn't have a divorce from a coach the quality of Kyle Shanahan. He's an excellent coach. And I, you know how I feel about Sean McVay. I would say Shanahan is probably ahead of him.
He's a stud.
He's a great coach.
I don't know that I would go that far.
I'm
only
going
because
very far.
The hardware says that Sean McVay is better. The ring is the thing.
The ring is the thing.
The ring is the thing. And I do think, though, in the larger, broader context, that it will be a coach who is probably discarded, surprisingly, or fired, that we're going to have a conversation about moving forward with the Bears. And because I think that we'll talk about all the stuff that happened yesterday at Halas Hall and all the stuff that's going to happen this week at Halas Hall and all the things that are left on the schedule. But this is veering toward a coaching search.
Will Matt Eberflus's seat get colder when the league says, oh, yeah, you won that game?
I could just imagine, you know, somebody walking into the officiating meeting.
Oh, look.
And like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Did you see the way that they...
We're going to award the Bears the win. Okay. Yeah, you go. You go, girl.
Did you see what they did to Scott Daly? Poor Scott Daly. Okay, we need to... We need to make something unprecedented here. We're going to award the Bears the victory.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
And we're going to make that seat under Matt Eberflus really
you know what we're gonna
lukewarm.
Do? We're going to say that the Bears still lost the game because we can't change it, but we're going to encourage the Bears to give their head coach a contract extension.
Wow. Well...
Eberflus gets extension over blown Daly call.
Trace, Trace Armstrong might be arguing that.
Okay. Good luck with that one.
Good luck with that one, Trace.
Yeah, I don't think he's arguing that.
No.
I think he knows.
I think he knows. And I think that you understand why the Bears would send away that tape to get a clarification. But when you make such a point of that, I know he was just asked a question. After a game and a loss like Sunday's, it kind of does leave you like, makes you cringe a little bit. Yesterday was cringy.
Yeah, it was really tough.
You feel bad now because it's devolved.
Go on. You can say it.
It's gotten to the point where
I understand
and respect criticism and having a difference of opinion of the way that the Bears are coached and the way that the coach represents himself and all those things. But I think what has happened is now devolved into mockery. And I'd never really like when that happens because Matt Eberflus, whatever, when coaches are mocked because of the way they handle themselves, you can disagree with things. I think it's not always enjoyable.
No, I one of the things I really despise is knowing that the move you made lost the game, would you do it again? It didn't work, but yeah, I like the decision-making behind it. There's no defense of doing something that failed. Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah,
that.
I don't understand why you'd go down the path.
I don't know why you would even – I don't know why you would take the –
Because you kind of, you're inviting even more
that's all
criticism.
That's all you're doing.
And I think you also look like you are not aware of the criticism that you have received, and it doesn't matter to you.
No, it's just...
It's stubbornness.
It's crazy. It's craziness.
Bad advice.
Listen,
though,
it didn't work. It fell apart. It was an absolute, rock solid deadlock disaster. Would you do it again? Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat.
That was so much fun.
I'd love to do that again. In fact, I did it a couple weeks ago, just in a different way. I mean, give me a break, for the love of God. Of course I do things differently.
Numbers are piling up. Matt Eberflus's record in one score.
And it's like, oh, my God, it is just the most damning evidence.
Sharks are circling.
It's just what happens.
Yep.
It's what happens.
The NFL.
It's the NFL. And the fall always is out there. Hired to be fired, my friend. Doesn't matter who you are, where you work. Doesn't matter. It's just it's a bottom line results business.
Whether in the NFL.
It's an all-in game, and you have one outcome. You win or you lose your job. That's it.
Whether it's in the NFL or Ball State.
There you go. That's the same thing. Same thing with your friend. And there's always, you know, you can be in the NFL, and then you can find your way to Ball State.
Stop it.
If you want to get back into the MAC.
Stop.
If you're floozy.
Back to the MAC.
All right. We've got to knock that off, because that's the serious stuff, and we need to get serious about it. We've got the pick six next. We're going to go through, chew over all the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Chirp, chirp.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Do you understand why Matt Eberflus added penalty possibilities, be it a false start or a holding call, to justify not running another play at the end of the game and settling for a 46-yard field goal that was ultimately blocked? Why the continued protest?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do not understand. I don't understand why you're trying to add more reasons that you made the right decision. It failed. It's crazy. I think the answer is that there's a statistic out there that that in his career, Cairo Santos is 70 of 70 inside 40 yards. So obviously, all you got to do is get inside 40 yards. And if you really want a perfect kick, why wouldn't you try to do that? Well, you know, we got enough yards and we lost our nerve and we're worried that we could be set back. We're not thinking of the positives. We're not feeling the momentum. We're not looking at what the quarterback has managed to do and being wowed by it. We're saying, well, where's the next shoe drop? We've gotten far enough. I honestly believe it's a defenseless position to say, you know, you had time for another play, but, well, humana, humana, abada, abada. What if we jumped off sides? Ooh. You know, listen, what if a large rock hit the planet Earth and it wiped us all out? Oh, my gosh. There are some things that you can't worry about. There's no future in it, right? I mean, you want to.
Did you say there's no future?
I'm saying that the sky is falling, okay. Chicken Little. And that's what it sounds like to me when I hear a guy trying to justify is that, well, I don't know about the future. The future is in peril at Halas Hall. I mean, look, it didn't work. You made the wrong decision. We thought that would be good enough. I get it. I understand. you know, we thought we got to the we had a line of demarcation and we got past it. He has to kick that. We have to have a good operation. Why don't you talk to Hightower? Why are you asking me these questions? I understand that this guy's taking on water like crazy, but you can't plug a dam. You move on. You cannot give one and you move on. That's your only choice in this situation. Don't keep telling me that you wouldn't change it. It didn't work.
He's doing this because he's owning it. He's owning the situation. Let me ask you this. Had he said, I'm going to take accountability, guys. I should not have done that yesterday. I should have ran at least one more play. I'm guessing that this morning we would have said, that's a fireable offense. He's admitting that he screwed up. It's a fireable offense. He should be gone. As soon as the press conference ended, I also heard some people suggest that he now just take a fine from the NFL. Don't talk. Just take the fine. pay the fine. Because no matter what he says, and that's our job to a certain extent, we're going to second guess what he's doing. But if he would have said, my bad, guys, I believe that somebody on this station, I won't even say it's you guys, somebody on this station would have said, that's a fireable offense. He's sticking to his guns. He's telling you why he did what he did. And again, I'm going to say, I think today might be Pat Manley Day. I want to hear more Pat Manley after he's seen more views of it. Because again, three guys got their asses kicked on the play. Right. And maybe the Packers did something illegal.
We'll get to that.
So I think, Dustin, he wasn't really sticking to his guns. He was adding an explanation as if he got more advice after the fact to include this. Hey, Matt, you might want to mention this next time. And that's where I think it came across as a little bit weaker than he would have intended or wanted it to. But I also think that we're all missing the point here. How he explained it on Monday to me is much less concerning, even though it'll get a lot more attention, than the decision itself and what this says about the way that he thinks. I really think that this provides a glimpse into what some of the problem is. Your best coaches, and I don't need to name who my favorites are, you already know that. But when you have a football coach, the power of positive thinking is a real thing. You can speak things into existence. You can't go through life as a football coach and believe that you can affect change in a positive way just because good things are going to happen because I am going to put you in the best position to succeed. The Bears, in this case, Matt Eberflus expected the worst to happen. He expected bad things to occur because that's the way losers think. It's a loser's lament. Well, we can't do this because this will go wrong. I want my head coach to say, we are going to run the ball, we're going to gain 5 yards, and then we're going to kick a field goal, and we're going to celebrate because that's what we do here. We win. You believe in me, and I will believe in you, and we're all going to celebrate. That, to me, what he said yesterday just underscored how he doesn't approach life that way or his job that way. And I understand because of all the losing that's happened, it has beaten him down. So maybe at one point in time, Matt Eberflus was Mr. Positivity and would have said, this was my decision. I'm going to stand by it, live with it, deal with the results. Chicago has beaten him down to the point where he doesn't have any confidence anymore. So bad things are expected to happen because, you know what? They have.
Mully, I got a question for you and Hawk.
That's the voice of Jared Payton. He's with Mully and Haw at 9 a.m. when Caleb Williams referred to Rome Odunze postgame Sunday as my guy Rome. Do you think that provided a glimpse into what might be contributing the issues with the chemistry with veteran wide receivers? By the end of the season, are you sure who will be the Bears' number one wide receiver? And are you sure now?
Rome Odunze is Caleb Williams' guy. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Maybe it's Keenan Allen if it's not Rome Odunze. I'm not sure it's DJ Moore. And that may be something we don't have intimate knowledge of in the relationship, but you can see what we see and we can speculate. But there's an easier rapport and chemistry between Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. And those two catches on that key drive will be, you know, something that they both build on. Remember that drive against the Packers? Remember 3rd and 19? This is something that stood out to me. And when he referred to Rome as his guy, they're both rookies. We know the background. We know they're going to grow together. This is Caleb Williams, Jamar Chase. You know, the Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase. Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze. I'm not convinced that by the end of the season, this won't be more obvious. Each Sunday, it probably will become more so. But something to keep an eye on. You hope that they can spread the ball around, but the Bears don't, you know, have a dynamic passing game yet. So I think you take what you can get. And right now, the surest thing about it is Roma Dunze seems to be Caleb Williams' guy.
Well, if Roma Dunze can turn into Jamar Chase without the attitude, sign me up. Okay, like sign me up.
I'll take the attitude too.
Sure, sign me up. I might do without the attitude, but sign me up for that. Listen, they've got three wide receivers that are all above average. I don't know that every team has three defensive backs that are all above average. The thing is, the Bears need to find where that weak spot is and just get the ball to the open receiver. But maybe Caleb Williams is the type of guy who keeps receipts. Okay, there's no doubt about the fact that, you know, DJ Moore said that Justin Fields was his guy. And maybe after the fact that DJ Moore got paid, I'm just speculating here, okay? Maybe DJ Moore doesn't spend enough time on the field afterwards. Maybe Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, you know, go out. Maybe they build Lego things together. That's something that Caleb likes to do. Maybe they watch extra film together and it becomes his. I don't care who's his guy as long as it helps the Bears get into a position to kick a game-winning field goal against the Packers.
Yeah, you know, I think that when he said my guy Rome, I think he was talking about the fact that they're draft mates, that they flew on the plane to Detroit together, that they've kind of shared their hopes and dreams, and they come in at the same time and they go to rookie camp and all the rest of it. I just think he's talking about their friendship, which is totally a natural thing. I think the Bears' number one receiver is DJ Moore. He is the best wide receiver on the roster. I'll be honest with you. I'm holding my water on Roma Dunze, and I'm hoping that things work out better than they have been. But I am not overwhelmed by what he has done thus far. And I wanted him, and I wanted them to get him. But I'm just saying, I don't see him going up and getting the ball like he did in college. That maybe that's on the way. Hopefully that's on the way. I don't see him as especially speedy a receiver. I think Malik Nabers is a better player than Roma Dunze. If you look at that rookie class, and I don't know that I believed. I knew Malik Nabers a really good player, but I think he's been better thus far. I know that Rome has talked about his old college teammate who went to the Rams and had an unbelievable rookie season.
Puka Nacua.
He's not Puka Nacua, okay? Not this year. So, I mean, listen, it takes time to get to fit in, to get your place. You know, you can have your guy Rome. I'll take my guy DJ Moore.
I did not know that was coming.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not being mean about it. I'm just saying. Rome's got a little bit of a distance to go.
Hey, Rome wasn't built in a day.
No. Come on. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe that's something Eberflus can clear up a little bit later on today, but that's a good question.
Lead to Rome.
Rome if you want to.
Rome around the world.
Cue up the B-52s, Brandon. What did you make of Matt Eberflus saying the Bears saw direct contact with long snapper Scott Daly on the blocked field goal that determined Sunday's game? He said the Bears are sending a copy of this video to the league. If it wasn't called, what's the point? Does it make you or him or anyone feel better?
Hey, I mean, look. Are you ready? Here you go. I'm going to try to make a noise. Okay. Whoop-dee-doo. I mean, it makes him feel better to turn in the tape. And then he'll find out, well, yeah, that was. The league will issue a thing saying Matt Eberflus made the correct decision. The officiating let him down. Okay. Yeah. There could have been a penalty. There could have been a penalty on them, but they didn't call it. It's it to me. I mean, go after the officials, kick them out of the Super Bowl, make sure those guys don't get to the playoffs, hit them in the pocketbook. But guess what? It doesn't change anything. The league's not going to do anything or change anything. Or, I mean, it's just more howling at the moon, as far as I'm concerned. Well, you know, obviously we made the wrong decision. Obviously it went against us, but we're going to go to the league and make them apologize to us because there was a. I mean, it's what you do. It's what you send in. But don't stand up there and tell me it. I mean, you want to talk about an eye roll? That was like, oh, well, you're sending it to the league. Give me a break. Doesn't matter.
Well, I don't think the tape's going to tell you that the Packers did anything wrong on that play when Larry Borum was on his tush and when the inside lane
was
given to
Matt. They had a guy pushing from behind, Dustin. They had, not only did they hit the guy, the long snapper, which you're not allowed to do. They've changed those rules and they call it all the time. They had another guy that was shoving the guy up. Do you see how high they got up? They had somebody helping him, which is illegal.
Well, based on that comment, then I think Matt Eberflus is doing the right thing. If you're that passionate about what happened, then how can you go with a sound effect for your answer?
Because,
that's doing the right thing.
Because it means nothing.
And that means that Eberflus did the right thing. If the Packers, Mully, you just said the Packers cheated. Cheated out loud.
You could have thrown a flag on that for two different reasons.
Okay, well then, but then.
But they didn't, Dustin. So I'm saying, this is another stance at the podium to explain how you made the right call. Problem is, they didn't call it.
I don't have any problem with him doing this. I think it's consistent because, especially when you consider, was it Javon Dexter was flagged for leveraging, and we saw the Steelers have a situation where leveraging is a point of emphasis this year. I wondered if that was going to be the call. I did wonder about the protection of the long snapper. And the Bears send in, every team sends in a series of plays every week to the league office, whether it's a late hit on a quarterback or why isn't this called on this or why was this holding call? Questionable calls get scrutiny. The Bears have about 47 assistant coaches. Somebody's in charge of sending clips to the league office. Whoever that person is needs to do that in a timely fashion. So I think when Matt Eberflus is asked about it, certainly he's under scrutiny for the other stuff that happened and his role in making those things happen. But this, to me, was just a matter of it's routine. It's something that every team does every single week.
Right.
This week it gets more attention. And when he gives voice to it, well, yes, we are sending that in. It sounds more like an excuse because we're ready and the Sharks are circling. So everything that he says is going to be dissected and magnified. But I do think that this is well within his realm, and I think he has an obligation to get an explanation from the league office.
Oh, boy. Good question.
Coach Wonstadt with you guys, 740 to 820 in studio. Check it out on Twitch. Do you expect to hear from Ryan Poles this week? How important is it for Poles to make a clear distinction between him and Matt Eberflus at this stage? Or do you think Poles will stick by his guy, which could threaten his own standing?
I'm very curious about the next time we hear from Ryan Poles in a setting that isn't controlled. I am very curious to hear how Ryan Poles approaches his support for his head coach or how he's going to explain how the season got off the tracks, because the season has gotten far off the tracks. We were talking about the playoffs in August. Everything was happy and rosy. The picture was definitely one you want to paint as a general manager. This is the way you wanted your franchise to look. And something went terribly wrong. On the way home from London, everybody got lost. The season is adrift. Ryan Poles hired Matt Eberflus. Ryan Poles reinvested his faith in Matt Eberflus when he ignored and neglected Jim Harbaugh and the availability of a guy that would make your franchise better. And not just Jim Harbaugh, but bringing Matt Eberflus back, it was a sign of loyalty and support from the general manager with whom he shares an agent. So this is something that when Ryan Poles speaks next, how much do you support your guy now? And how much will you support him moving forward? I do want to hear the dreaded vote of confidence. And if we don't hear it, I think what he won't say or what he didn't say will speak volumes. So I'm very curious, based on the way things have gone now, based on the role coaching played in his latest loss. I do want to hear from Ryan Poles sooner the better.
I agree. Sooner the better. But I think if he does not pop back up again until Sunday on the flagship, I think you could read into the fact that he is distancing himself from him. He is getting so much scrutiny over, you know, here's another one. Which explanation, if you think that Eberflus screwed up, which explanation was worse? The explanation 2 weeks ago about not getting the extra, you know, allowing the Commanders the extra yards ahead of the Hail Mary? Or this explanation of why you didn't, you know, which one was worse?
And Poles, where would you rather me punch you, in the face or the stomach? I mean, does it matter?
Well, it's a topic, David. Yes. Okay. I mean,
which is worse? Which is worse in your mind?
Oh, I think the Commanders part was worse, because I actually don't. I sided with Eberflus. I'm not going to change my opinion. Three guys on the offensive line got their ass kicked. Maybe they cheated. Maybe they didn't. But I think Ryan Poles, it would be really big of Ryan Poles to be sitting shoulder to shoulder with Matt Eberflus if he's on his side and agrees with the decision made to kick the 46-yard field goal. I also think that they might do a little victory lap if the NFL comes back and says, you were right, we were wrong.
Yeah, I don't expect to hear from Ryan Poles this week, and I don't expect him to sit down next to Matt Eberflus and make a point that they're all in it together. I think it would be unwise of him to link his future to Matt Eberflus's. I think that it would be unwise of him to give any sort of, the dreaded vote of confidence. It just, that sort of thing just kind of blows up on you. If anything, I'd wait till you win a game and maybe be more omnipresent. But I don't think this is the time for Ryan Poles. I also think if you're Ryan Poles and you're looking for your argument, you know, you're two plays away from being 6-4 and not 4-6. And I mean, if you really think about it, did they lose that Arizona game because they lost the Washington game? I mean, who knows what would have gone on after the fact. I think they lost the New England game because of attrition of schedule and injury and et cetera. I didn't think they had enough in that game in retrospect. But it probably didn't help. They were in the midst of a losing streak. But now these two losses are more on the coach because you led in the fourth quarter than they are on the general manager, whose argument the management was, yeah, well, if we had better coach, we wouldn't have lost those two games and the season would have turned dramatically. So I think that he doesn't need to air that out. He doesn't need to say anything. He needs to just go ahead and do his job and plan and plot and try to get better and surface after a win, maybe.
Different question on a different topic.
That's the voice of Mike Florio. He's here with you at 8:44 this morning. Were Coby White's strong comments after Sunday's disastrous loss an example of an emerging vocal leader or a guy frustrated with his teammates? And can you believe the Bulls entered Monday night's game having taken only two charges all season? And Alex Caruso, well, he's already got three.
You know, that's Alex Caruso. That's what he does. And you know, it's why he's sometimes unavailable, because he sacrifices his body, and not every player is willing to do that. And certainly there are a lot of players that are learning how to play defense. Coby was one of them. I think he's done better at it. I still don't think of him as a defensive stalwart or a stopper or anything like that. He's not Alex Caruso, that's for sure. I think it was good. I think he's an emerging vocal leader. I think this team, I think that it is evidence of him becoming more comfortable as as one of the main guys on this team. And he's with kind of aging veteran players, and he's the young guy that is going to be the future all-star. I think he's one of these guys that always could knock it down, and he's developing into a better all-around player, and he understands what it takes to win, and he's right. You know, their defensive effort has been awful. Josh Giddey can't play a lick of defense, which is why Josh Giddey's numbers aren't, I'm talking about usage, isn't where he would want it to be. But that's not news. He was the same way at Oklahoma City, and he's the same way here. And he's another younger guy that's got to get better at that. And I think the coach is already sort of preaching that to him, already sending him messages through the media. Yeah, hey, Kobe went through this too, and now look at where he's at with it. I think Billy's handling it well, and I think it's just part of kind of growing up as a player, and I think that definitely Kobe White has grown up quite a bit as a player in front of our eyes.
As a fan, I love the fact that he called himself and his teammates out, that they've got to do better on defense, that effort is not acceptable, and it's definitely not acceptable at the United Center, which continues to sell out night after night after night after night.
I love what he said. Called the defense unacceptable, embarrassing, and a disservice to the organization and a disservice to the fan base. He said that after Sunday's loss to the Rockets, and then he spoke even louder last night. He backed it up 25 points. That's how you do that. He had pressure that he wanted to point and put on himself, and he went out and he shot lights out, and he played as good of a defense as you're going to see him play. The Bulls are not a defensive team, but you can control, Thomas Brown, your effort and your attitude, and they need a better job of controlling their effort defensively. Josh Giddey isn't it defensively. He's a liability, but other guys can step up and play a little bit better, and I think that's what he was getting at. And I think Billy Donovan doubled down the day after. He had his players back because this was not accidental. It sounds like Kobe White wanted to make it known that he didn't find this acceptable. And this is the way the leaders talk. Good for him.
Can he go? Foot race. Glenn will catch him. Touchdown. Pick six, Notre Dame.
What surprises are we expecting when college football playoff rankings come out later tonight? Is Notre Dame overrated, properly rated in the most recent AP poll where they check in at number 6? And do you consider the Irish a legit title contender?
I'm not sure about the surprises. Maybe an SEC team would be a little bit unhappy if they get ranked lower than possibly they would like to. I think I'll be looking for Notre Dame keeps winning, and I keep getting more curious each week that they do. 8-game winning streak now. They're averaging 43 points per game through that streak, and I'm curious about where their seeding will be. I'm curious what their matchup would be, and everything now is about the playoff. I know they have Army in New York. I know they have USC in LA. That's a tough coast-to-coast schedule. That's what you sign up for when you go play at Notre Dame. Very impressed by the way that Marcus Freeman has rallied his team back. I asked a question. It's rhetorical, but I do wonder, are they here because they lost to Northern Illinois? Did they respond to that loss in that way? And was that a blessing in disguise? Or would they be the number one team in the country had they not lost to Northern Illinois? I don't know which was better for the program. It might be the fact that they took a loss and he's reminded them every day since of what that they can't do. But this is an interesting year in South Bend. And tonight I'm really looking to see where they are and what the potential matchups would look like.
Yeah, David, I agree. I think that they are where they are because they had that loss. Now, it could have been to somebody else as well, but I think the Northern at home, Northern was supposed to be basically a cakewalk. Maybe the starters don't even play in the second half. Maybe the second quarterback gets some reps in the entire second half of the game. It didn't turn out that way, and I'm sure that everybody is reminded about that loss, you know, constantly. This is not a great college football season. What's really going to be interesting, it's interesting each week, but will be very interesting is if, you know, what happens to 10-0 right now, Indiana, assuming they lose at Ohio State this week, what happens to them, right? And we also have to keep in mind, understand the rules of the college football rankings. Right now, the rankings don't reflect the conference champions. The top four conference champions are your technically 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds when they actually play the games. So, you know, again, you know, Miami, you know, would Miami beat Notre Dame on a neutral field? Would Ole Miss beat Notre Dame on a neutral field? You know, probably all favored over Notre Dame on a neutral field. But right now, Penn State's ranked 4th. Penn State's not very good. And number one, Oregon went into Madison and struggled mightily on Saturday
night. Lucky to come out.
Yep. Right? So, I mean, there's a lot to be determined. And that's what's cool about this, that there's still so much to be determined.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, the story of the college football playoff rankings is the story of this season, which is how many teams from the SEC are going to get in and how many teams from the Big Ten are going to get in. That's all that matters. Ultimately, you're going to have an argument about the 12 teams. Now, the Big Ten, right now, they're pretty highly ranked. We'll see what happens if Ohio State were to lose to Indiana, or if Indiana loses to Ohio State as expected, only loses badly. Then they could be out completely. If they have a good loss, then they could be in, despite a loss. But I think it's going to come down to that. And I think that the problem that you have is these SEC teams are cannibalizing each other. And so you're going to wind up. I mean, are you going to have a three-loss team in the SEC, or a three-loss SEC team in the Final 12? I would say at this point you probably are, because they're all, other than Texas, they all got a couple losses. Who's going to win the SEC? Does that mean you're going to only have a team that gets an automatic berth and another team? I think they're going to end up with a three-loss SEC team in the 12. Just looking at the numbers of it. Now, the good thing is we are winding down, guys. Do you realize there are basically two more weeks left in the college season before you figure out who's going to be playing and who in the conference stuff you're talking about, Dustin? So I just think that the season is coming down to the wire, and I don't think I know how many teams from the two big conferences are going to make it. And I think that's a problem for the two big conferences. And if they get bitten by that this year, well, that's their problem, right? I mean, there'd be a lot of people in college football happy about it, but it would not be the necessarily best grouping of teams in college football. So I'm kind of very curious to see how they set this up moving forward. All right. That's the Pick Six. We got to get to the extra point. We'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Big Z, who joins us at 7 this morning, mentioned the Bears' failure to get pressure on Jordan Love as a problem for the Bears' defense. The Bears have hit Love 6 times and sacked him 3 times in 3 games over 2 years. The Packers put the same stats against Caleb Williams on Sunday. Is this team still short a pass rusher, or maybe even two?
I don't agree with Brad that the biggest problem the Bears face is the lack of a pass rush, or that's a bigger concern than some of the end of the game decisions, but that's a debate for another day, and that's okay. I will agree that the pass rush has been lacking, and it's been noticeably kind of tepid and really taking a step backward. And I think part of that's because Montez Sweat has been injured, doubled, ineffective. All I know is they played 10 games, he's got 3.5 sacks, and the great multiplier hasn't really been multiplying. And you need him to add some to his sack total. And he needs to multiply so other people can be better at their jobs and rush the passer. Montez Sweat has not dominated in the way that we expected him to dominate. There could be very understandable reasons for that, but that's a big part of this. So, they're short a pass rusher because they don't have the biggest pass rusher they have living up to expectations. So they have they have enough to be better. They have enough to be better, so they should be better.
Agreed, David. They should be better. Montez Sweat should be better. Takes himself out of games, seems to not be in there for every single important snap, and we went over the top on him not set. When he's not there, the Bears can't set an edge. He's still a very good player, but 3.5 sacks for the amount of money that he is provided by the Bears is not nearly enough.
Well, he's their best defensive lineman. I got to tell you, like, I don't want to go after individual players, but They could use someone opposite him, whether that's developing a player, whether that's, you know, Austin Booker eventually getting better. I don't know. DeMarcus Walker's doing fine, but you could use better. I guess what they don't have the three technique. Like, I thought that we had decided that that Dexter he was going to be better this year, Javon Dexter. And it doesn't look like he's gotten much better. Zach Pickens, I know he was hurt for a while, but he's not making tons of plays either. Like, I thought those guys would be making more plays by now. And I think that, you know, it's a little scary when you think about waiting on guys to develop. It doesn't mean they can't do it. It's just sometimes it's not happening kind of in line with how the defense is growing. I'd like to see more signs of them getting better so you feel like you don't need to keep adding to that moving forward. And that to me is really the root of the question. That other than Montez Sweat, who would you not replace if you had the opportunity to get better? And that's the NFL. That's how you're supposed to approach it, and that's how they should approach it. But they've got guys. I just would like to see them kind of do more. That's all. Not taking shots.
Need to push the right buttons.
312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Does the result change anything for you as far as going forward? Would you do the same thing again in a similar situation?
Yeah, I mean, where the conditions were and where we were in the game, I would say, yeah, I would do the same. I mean, would you like to be closer? Yeah, sure. You'd like it to be at the 50-yard line, but it is where it is. And you could have done a bunch of different things there. You could have ran a pass. You could have ran a play, outside play. You could have ran another play that we punched it there, forward for 2 yards, you know, from the 30 to the 28. So, again, if that thing breaks for a couple more yards, it's definitely a positive. But that's where it is.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of The Score. That's Matt Eberflus sticking to his guts.
You know what else he could have done?
Won the game?
You could have believed in your team.
Oh, boy.
I'm just saying, that's when it comes right down to a lot of possibilities, a lot of possible outcomes. The thing that bothered me the most is not that he doubled down necessarily. The coaches are going to be stubborn. I think that the whole idea, the premise of him not believing that something good could happen if he believed in his team was the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah, I mean, look.
He assumed that they could get a holding call.
Yes.
A false start. Something bad was going to happen. When you assume something bad could happen, something bad usually happens.
Yeah, here's the thing. They should have kicked it. They should have won the damn game. There's no shadow of a doubt. But the reality is that the guy that kicked it is perfect inside 40 yards. We all know that. Yep. I'm not saying it's a question of, but he's perfect. He is 70 of 70. So you just really can't get past that fact.
It's hard to.
I'm not saying they could have gotten down to a 40-yard field goal. I'm not saying that they have a play in their hip pocket that'll get them 7 or 8 yards or whatever they would have needed, but there is that possibility. There was time left. You probably could have run a couple
plays. You could have run two plays, probably.
Yes, you could
have. Did you see what DraftKings tweeted out?
No.
Okay, this is statistic.
Okay.
The Bears had a 71.3 chance to win during Sunday's game against the Packers, and they lost. Over the last three seasons, the Bears have blown 5 leads with a 90% or higher chance of winning. The odds of losing all 6 of those games are 1 in 68 million.
Coaches hit the lotto. you're more likely to get struck by lightning.
Is that bad luck, bad coaching, a combination of both?
Well, there's the problem is that, did you say 6 times, right?
Yeah.
That is, there's a combination going on of bad coaching with bad luck.
The trend is your friend.
Yeah. There's bad coaching involved in
that. Yeah, there is. And I think that's what we're talking about. The judgment in late game situations, the decision making is what Bixie and I sort of disagreed about.
Yes.
But we both can agree that they need to rush the passer better, but they need to make better decisions down the stretch.
He is in a muddle with the whole penultimate play thing.
Yes.
That's been the problem now. The last play of the game. When you lose on the last play of the game two times in a four-week stretch, you do so because you have made the wrong decision on more than one play and not just the two game deciders. It was the wrong decision on the play before each of the other ones.
Will he last until the penultimate game of the season?
I think he is going to. And I think he's going to get one more bite at that apple against the Packers.
In Lambeau.
I don't think there'll be many more after that.
I don't either.
All right, Biggs time. We're going to bring in our guy, Brad Biggs. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.